So karma, mere performance of karma cannot be the means for accomplishing moksha. In fact, one does not need to do anything at all for moksha. Because moksha, the freedom, implies happiness. Happiness is nothing but fullness. So being full is being happy. Make this being full as a noun, fullness is being full is being happy. Therefore, fullness is equal to happiness. So being limited is being unhappy. Being limited is being bound. Therefore, being limited is being unhappy. So being bound is equal to what? Being unhappiness. So being full, being full means being limitless. Being limitless is being happy. Being full is equal to being limitless. Being limitless is equal to being happy. Therefore, fullness is limitlessness. Limitlessness is happiness. So happiness is what? Being free. So being limited is being bound, and being limitless is being free. Got it? Therefore, full happiness, fullness is in fact freedom. This is fullness is what? The reality. Fullness and reality are not two different things. I'll explain again. With reference to ocean, if we say the reality of the ocean is H2O, and to be full of the ocean, to fill the ocean, the H2O need not do any action at all. Being full is the swarupam of the H2O, iyalbu, nature of the H2O. So fullness is what? Nature of the H2O. With reference to ocean, fullness and H2O are not two different things. H2O is fullness and fullness is H2O. With reference to ocean. So fullness is happiness. You have to remember this, limitlessness. In Tamil we say niraivu. Therefore this fullness is the, similarly with reference to the whole jagat also, what is fullness? What is fullness? Being full is fullness. What is it which is full? What is it which fills everything? Whole jagat, which permeates everything, pervades everything. Reality of the jagat. So the reality with reference to jagat, which is otherwise known by the word Brahman, is of the nature of fullness, is of the nature of limitlessness. That reality and this fullness are not two different things. Therefore, which is already there, which is not to be attained. The karma phalam is something to be attained, which is not there with you. Whereas happiness is something which is already there, which has to be attained, which has to be discovered. Therefore, what? Happiness is something to be discovered and known. Therefore, knowledge, knowing what the reality is knowing what fullness is. Knowing what fullness is, knowing what limitlessness is. Knowing what limitlessness is, knowing what happiness is. Knowing what happiness is what? The discovery of happiness is attainment of happiness. Attainment of happiness is attainment of moksha. Really speaking. Discovery is attainment, in fact. Knowing is attainment. Therefore, one does not need to do anything to discover, to attain moksha, because moksha is not all to be attained, something to be discovered. Therefore, karma is not a means for moksha. Because moksha is not something to be attained, something to be discovered, something to be known. Therefore, knowledge itself is moksha. Knowledge is the means for moksha. Knowledge itself is moksha. Therefore, he talks about the limitation of karma in the first verse. Karma is jadam. Why karma is jadam? Because karma cannot produce any phalam by itself. Karma itself is jadam because karma is a product of ignorance. Karma is a product of ignorance. How do we say here? Because performance of karma, any karma you do is because is expression of, now in fact, it's impelled by your desires which arise in the mind. So desire is not created by you. Desires are nothing but disturbance in the stillness of mind. Desires are thought waves which rise, you know, in the form of thoughts. So this desire alone impels the actions. If there is no desire at all, then no karma is possible. No activity is possible. No movement is possible. Therefore, actions are, in fact, nothing but expressions of desires. Mod, in fact, so the desires are due to the needs naturally which are there, the emotional needs which are there naturally in the mind. In the physical body being there, the natural biological needs, and the mind, the mind being there, the natural emotional needs. The needs are natural, we are not creating our needs. I need that, I need this, I need this, I need this, I need this. These needs are very natural. So needs are natural, needs alone give rise to desires. Desires alone impel the actions. And these needs are due to the sense of inadequacy, centered on I. The desire needs are due to the sense of the fundamental problem of the smallness being centered on I. That means what? What is that sense of inadequacy, the sense of the smallness being centered on I, is due to the ahankaraha, the erroneous notions one has about the self. Every human mind entertains this notion. Because notion of about anything also is a thought. Every human mind entertains a thought, you know, the notion, limb of a thought about the self. And which notion about the self is definitely erroneous. This erroneous notion about the self is called ahankaraha. What is the notion? That I, now you add I here. I is okay. But am also is okay. And anything added to the I am is what? I itself by itself is a thought. Am by itself is a thought. So I am together as a, is a thought. That is fine. Isn't this a thought? That there is a water, the wave rises. That is I am. I or am, these thoughts arise. That's fine. But anything added to the thought that I am is what? The notion about the self. Anything now which is there as an addition to this thought I am is what? Notion about the self. I am small in terms of so many things. In terms of looks, in terms of position, in terms of possessions, in terms of knowledge, in terms of accomplishments, in terms of social status, in terms of, you know, influence, in terms of manpower, in terms of money power, in terms of so many things that we can say, I am small. And not only that, I am a limited individual. I am an individual. Individuals, I am an individual. I am a limited being. I am born. I'll be dead. I am born, I'm going to die, I'm a mortal, I'm sick. Any notion about you, the self, anything added to I am, look at this, anything you add to what I am is what you hold. in fact is a notion one has about the self, which is called ahankara. So this erroneous notion one entertains about the self, which is in the form of a thought in the mind, is ahankara. Due to this ahankara alone, there is sense of inadequacy. Due to ahankara alone, the smallness is centered on I. This ahankara, why ahankara is there? This erroneous notion about the self is due to the superimposition of the limitations, the attributes of the non-self upon the self. Because the self is of the nature of limitlessness. The self is nothing but the reality. The self is the reality. Reality is of the nature of fullness. If a self is of the nature of fullness, self is of the nature of limitlessness, self is of the nature of happiness. But what is the self is, but non-self is, any non-self is subject to time, non-self is subject to no spatial limitation, non-self is subject to all limitations. So the limitations of the non-self are superimposed upon the self. Therefore, what the self, there's a notion, wrong notion about the self. Self is, I am limited. And the superimposition of the limitations of the non-self upon the self are due to erroneous self-perception, which is called adhyasaha. The mistake, mistaking the non-self for the self. That erroneous self-perception itself is due to self-ignorance, because there is no knowledge what the self is. What exactly is the self is, what the reality is not known. Therefore, self-ignorance is, who created self-ignorance? Nobody created it. It is naturally there. We should never ask the question, why there is self-ignorance? Self-ignorance is natural. We never ask this question. Without asking the question, this, then try to undo the, try to eliminate the ignorance, resolve the ignorance, then you will find out, you will find answer why ignorance also is. Till then you can't find out. You just understand there is self-ignorance. But self-ignorance is the root cause of this karma. Understand now? The word karma is jadam. And this jadam karma, which is the product of self-ignorance, which is the product of ignorance, being jadam, being inert in nature, it does not have the capacity to produce a phalam. You know that? Karma is only nimittam, instrumental for the phalam, any fruit to manifest. In fact, the fruit of an action, which seems to be the product of karma, is in fact preordained, in fact determined by the natural law and order, which is Ishvara, Bhagavan. The Ishvara, Agya phalam prapyate, always remember this, kartuhu agya phalam prapyate, Ishvara agya phalam prapyate. And this phalam is what? And this also, he says, Karturagya prapyate phalam, karma kim param, karma tat jadam. Because karma is that limited, this jadam, karma is not superior. Not superior means what? Karma cannot bless you with param. The word param means the absolute. What is absolute end? Mokshaha, happiness. Kim karma param, do you think karma can bless you with happiness, the param absolute end, moksha? No, not at all. Karma is not superior, karma is inferior, because karma cannot be the means for moksha, the absolute end. Kim karma param datum shaknoti va? Na, na. Karma na param dadati. If a karma kimbam karma tajjadam, he says, and not only that, karma, once karma performed, definitely is followed by karma phalam, which is ordained by the order. Therefore, phalam, always phalam will be there. The phalam has to be exhausted. In order to exhaust the phalam, one has to be born again. Therefore, rebirth again what? Again, once you are born, you have to be doing karma. Once you are doing karma, you will have phalam. The phalam has to be exhausted. Therefore, karma always ever keeps you bound by karma. That means, therefore, kriti maha udadav patanasya karmam bhavati karma. It becomes a meat. It always what? No? Kriti maha udadihi, the ocean of samsara. Kriti maha udadihi, we call it maha udadihi samsara sagaraha. The ocean of samsara, it is the karma, performance of karma is in fact cause for your remaining bound by karma in the ocean of samsara. Kriti mahodadav patana karanam, phalam ashashvatam, and whatever, even if you think karma is, phalam is produced by karma, or phalam follows the karma, that phalam is ashashvatam phalam, because moksha that you are seeking is shashvatam phalam. What is shashvatam phalam? Permanent fruit is what? Shashvatam phalam is permanent fruit. What is permanent fruit? Jnanam alone can bless you with the permanent fruit. Jnana phalam is moksha. Karma phalam is artha kama dharma. Time bound in nature. Because karma phalam, before karma the phalam is not manifest. After karma the phalam manifests. And that phalam also what's time bound. Pain or pleasure comes and goes. Impermanent. Ashashvatam. Ashashvatam. Ashashvatam phalam. Phalam ashashvatam. But what about moksha? Moksha is fullness. What is fullness? Nature of reality. What is reality? Which is eternal. Then what does it mean? There's no beginning, no end, no change. So what? How can permanent moksha, the permanent nature, H2O is the nature of the water, means a permanent one. It never does water become something different from what it is. Isn't it? Similarly, with reference to ocean, water never becomes, no time, the water becomes less. No, one pot of ocean is not filled with it. You can't say that. It's always full. So fullness is the nature of reality. Therefore here we say, this phalam ashashvatam, fullness being, happiness being something eternal, something always there. The shashvatam, ashashvatam karma, the impermanent karma, or because karma itself being time bound in nature. The karma phalam cannot be timeless in nature. So the time-bound karma cannot produce a timeless, everlasting, eternal freedom, mokshaha. Phalam ashashvatam. So karma phalam is definitely time-bound in nature. Then phalam ashashvatam is a gati nirodhakam. I tell you, the more and more we perform karma, the more we bound by the karma phalam. Okay, the more we have karma, the more karma phalam we have, the more we have to exhaust the karma phalam, the more we will be born again and again. Therefore, there is no way of becoming free from bondage of karma. Therefore, it obstructs the performance of karma, obstructs your way to moksha. Gati nirodhakam. This is what karma is all about. Therefore, how karma should be performed? So here, that does not mean one should ignore karma totally. That does not mean one should become totally inactive. Inaction is not appreciated at all. Inaction is not the right thing. So non-performance of actions will not help one accomplish moksha. Mere performance of action also is not the means for moksha. Then what should we do then? Karma has to be performed. So non-performance of actions or performance of mere performance of actions is not the means for moksha. But karma has to be performed. But how it should be performed? Karma should be performed as yoga. This karma yoga. Why karma yoga serves an indirect means for moksha? We saw yesterday, mukti sadhakam bhavati. Karma performed as yoga serves as an indirect means for moksha. Mukti sadhaka, muktihi. How? Because karma performed as yoga serves, it prepares the mind for jnanam. It results in antakarna shuddhihi, which is required for jnanam, without which jnanam is not possible. Because knowledge of reality has to take place where? Where does knowledge have to dawn only in the mind, in the form of what? Thought only. And where is this reality available for recognition? In the mind only. The reality of the whole jagat has to be recognized only in the mind. Available for recognition only in your mind, not elsewhere. Even though your feet, your foot, your toes, your thighs, your shanks, your the whole physical body, your mind, your everything, all your pranas, all your powers of organs of action, everything is reality. The whole jagat is reality. The gross is reality, the subtle is reality, imperceptible is reality, perceptible is reality, visible is reality, invisible is reality, everything is reality, the law and order is reality, there is nothing which is not the reality. Everything is reality, but still that reality is, where is it available for recognition? Your toes are reality, your thighs are reality, but you can't see the reality. It is available for recognition. Recognition, very important word. That is why not experiencing, understand? Self is, therefore the reality has to be recognized. Reality is available for recognition. If you search all over, the whole jagat is reality, Ishvara, Bhagavan. But where is it available for recognition? Only in the mind. That recognition of the reality, the knowledge of the reality, rises as what? Only as the thought. Yes, dawn as the thought. Where again the same mind. And reality is available for recognition as what? As the very truth of the mind. Look at this. As the reality of the mind. Like reality of the entire ocean is water, means every reality of the thought, wave is also the same H2O. Similarly, the reality of the whole jagat is reality of the mind also. The reality of the mind means reality of every thought is the same reality. That is why the existence of the mind, the reality of the mind, essence of the mind, listen now, reality of the whole jagat is available for recognition as the existence of the mind. And this is why mind is so important for us. Mind is very important, the subtlest of the manifestations, very important. This mind has to become calm, disturbance free, turbulence free, quiet, because mind, you cannot expect the waveless ocean. You can't expect a turbulence free mind. But the mind has to become turbulence free to discover the stillness of the mind, to discover the silence of the mind, to discover the essence of the mind, to discover the reality of the mind. Therefore, for the mind to become, you know, calm, relatively calm and serene, in fact the mind must be free from impurities. The impure mind cannot be the turbulence-free mind, calm mind. The impure mind is a disturbed mind. So for the mind to become calm, the mind must be free from impurities. How can the mind become free from impurities? How can you make the mind pure? You see, being impure is natural. Like having headache is very natural. Having headache is not a problem of the head. Okay, you know the problem. It is not wrong for the head to have headache. Not wrong. Because it is wrong to have headache. It's not wrong. It is not proper to have a headache. It is not desirable. It is not pleasant to have a headache. But it is a pain, isn't it? But still, it is not wrong. Because it is natural. What is not, because now it is not natural. Similarly, it is natural for the mind to be impure. Therefore, the mind has to become pure mind. That's why antakarana ashuddhihi is natural. Antakarana shuddhihi, you know, is very important. Mind has to become pure. And how can the mind, because that is why mind is the bathroom, mind is the place, mind is the location where the reality has to be recognized. That is sanctum sanctorum is what? Mind. where the deity is available. Devata, understand now. Bhagavan is available in the garbhagraham of your mind. Mind is garbhagraham, and where you recognize the reality, the Bhagavan. That is why Ullam Tirkol, understand now, the temple is, mind is the temple, where you see Bhagavan there, the deity there, Murti there. It's not the temple. Every temple, garbhagraham, stands for the mind only. Because mind is so important for us. And this mind must be pure, pure, steady. For that, therefore, the mind has to become pure. Otherwise, recognition of the reality. Reality is always available. Look at this. There is no time reality is not there. There is no time the H2O is not there in the whale. There is no time H2O is not there in the ocean. In fact, there can never be, the ocean itself can never be without the water. It is always Nikam Aranirendra Paramurun. Understand now? It is always irremovably remains pervading the entire ocean H2O. Similarly, this reality which pervades the whole Jagat is no time reality is not there in your mind. Where the mind is reality. There is no time any thought is outside of reality, outside of, the reality. There is no time, no second, no fraction of second, reality is not there in the mind. When is way away from the water? Never. When is any thought is away from the reality? No. When is the mind away from the reality? Never. So when is Bhagavan not there? Tell me. There is no second, no fraction of second, no time. The mind exists, whether it is asleep, whether it is awake, whether it is the realm of dream, always, all types of thoughts, okay? The waking state is not outside of reality, the deep sleep is not outside of reality, the dream is not outside of reality, the mind is never outside of reality. When is reality not there? Tell me. Always it is there. But the only question is, you are not recognizing that reality where the mind is. We do not know where the reality is, where the mind is, what the reality is. It's all a question of what do you need to do? You have to recognize. Understand? This way, recognition, the knowledge of the reality. Now, recognition recognize only in the mind. That is why the mind has to become pure and steady. Unless the mind becomes pure, the recognition of the reality is not possible. Even though it's always there, we can never recognize it. Just to recognize where the mind is, the mind has become pure. Therefore, for the mind to become pure, I tell you, living a life of karma yoga is the only way. Na anyaha pantha vidyate ayanaya. There is no other means. There is no other shortcut method. Understand? There is no shortcut method. No meditation will ever help you discover this. First, unless the mind becomes pure, the other way is very difficult. Understand? Because mind has to become pure. For the mind to be steady, being steady implies the contemplative disposition of the mind. The meditative disposition of the mind is possible. Because to recognize the reality of the mind, in the mind, as the truth of the mind has to be in the contemplative disposition. And the contemplative disposition of the mind is possible only if the mind is pure, disturbed, turbulence-free mind, calm mind. Therefore, for the antakarana shuddhi, mental purity, the only way is living a life of karma yoga, wherein, as I explained to you, Ishwararpitam, na ichchayakritam. What is karma yoga? I explained yesterday, being very clear about the purpose of living this life, being discovering happiness, the fullness in the form of reality, which is already there. accesses, discovering the fullness which is nothing but reality as the self, discovering the fullness, the reality as the self, as the content of the word I is the ultimate purpose of living this life. And to live the life, one has to have the infrastructure, which implies one has to pursue artha and kama. But that artha kama pursuits become the relative ends. If one knows absolute end being moksha, then pursuit of artha and kama must be in conformity with dharma. Only then one can be ready for, mentally ready for that jnanam. Therefore, no end is ignored as unwanted, useless end. All the ends are important. The relative ends serve as means to accomplish the absolute end, moksha. So, being clear about the end being moksha, and knowing the value of limitation of artha kama, the time bound ends, knowing the value of dharma, when a person's all one's actions, when a person lives, all his actions become offered to Bhagavan. So Ishwar Arpitam Karma Mukti Sadakam Bhavati. Performing all one's actions with an attitude of offering it to Bhagavan serves as yoga, which is means for jnanam. And not only that, ne ichchaya kritam, all one's actions are governed by, not by one's own likes and dislikes, but all these actions are governed by one's knowledge of right and wrong, or knowledge of dharma, which means one becomes one's life, all one's actions are completely governed by dharma, means one is committed, totally committed to live a life of dharma, knowing the value of dharma, then it is na ichchaya kritam. As an ichya kritam karma. And not only that, we have to remember one more thing, what we saw in the first line. Katturajnaya prapyate phalam. When they say all the fruits of actions that we go through, we enjoy in our lifetime in the form of pairs of opposites. What is the fruit of an action? Any fruit of an action ultimately can reduce to what? The pairs of opposites. And all the facts of opposites can reduce to what? Two things, pain and pleasure. All your fruits of actions can be reduced to facts of opposites. And facts of opposites can be reduced to punya, reduced to what? Pain and pleasure. What is this? Who ordains this? Kartu Ajna. The order of Bhagavan. Bhagavan in the form of universal natural law and order, the natural laws which constitute the order alone determine the fruits of actions. Therefore the natural law and order, which is the constitution of the natural laws, and the natural laws are all Bhagavan. Everything is Bhagavan means natural laws are Bhagavan. Natural laws are Bhagavan. If natural laws are Bhagavan, what about the fruits ordained by the natural laws? Rava Prasadam. Gift from Bhagavan. When it is a gift, how do we accept it? I don't like this gift. You never say that. Even if you don't like, you don't say that. Oh, brown or orange, still I'm happy with the same. Any gift is okay. I would have preferred orange, but still brown. Also, I'm happily accepting it. Because that's the Prasadam. The prasada buddhihi. So what do we say? Prasada buddhihi. Understand now? So what comes is prasadaha, ordered by the order. The prasada buddhihi also converts your life into all your actions into yoga. Ishwarpitam, then na ichchayakritam, and such a karma, then really becomes what? Chitta shodhakam. So, performing one's action with the proper attitude of Ishwar Prabuddhi and accepting the situations as prasadam ordained by Bhagavan with the sameness of mind is what? In fact, in due course of time, prepares one mind in terms of mental purity means. This is the only way one can become mentally pure. So, mental purity implies also self-management. There is no way of becoming mentally pure without being able to manage one's own self. Here when I say self, I mean the mind. So being able to manage one's mind implies what? In fact, self-management. That's the only way one can become mentally pure. How can you manage yourself? How can you manage your mind? You cannot undo your thoughts, but you can manage your thoughts. Our anger, our desire, our jealousy, our hatred, very natural. Any pimple is very natural, any headache is very natural, any ache is very natural. So also these emotional problems are very natural. Jealousy, hatred, anger, desire, everything is very natural. But we cannot undo them totally, but we have to manage them. We have to manage them. How can we manage? This management implies being committed to live a life of dharma. The only way you can manage your thoughts. Commitment to dharma is the only way to be able to manage your thoughts. And commitment to dharma is possible only if you know the value of values. And to know the value of values, you should be the value of knowledge, of reality. To know the value of knowledge, you should have the purusharth nischaya. You must be very clear about the absolute end being, discovery of freedom which is already there. And you should know artha kamas being the relative ends. Only then, if artha kamas become the ultimate end, if moksha being the ultimate end is not very clear, the relative ends will become the ultimate end. When the relative ends become the ultimate end, you will not know the value of dharma. Understand? Therefore, to know the, it is very important here, how can one manage one's mind? Very important. How managing one's mind means managing all the thoughts one has in one's mind. Managing one's thoughts means what? Being able to manage one's anger, desire, greed, jealousy, hatred. All these things are there, always. Because they disturb you. It's not that easy. How are you going to manage those thoughts? Only by being committed to live a life of dharma. And to be able to commit oneself to live a life of dharma, one should know the value of dharma. And to know the value of dharma, one should know the value of knowledge. To know the value of knowledge, one should know the absolute end being moksha. If you know the absolute end is moksha, then you know artha kama being the relative ends also you should know. Not the absolute ends. Therefore, because then you do not undo. So be committed to live a life of values means what? Your actions are governed by your knowledge of right and wrong, not by your own likes and dislikes. That means what? You never do any action without discretion. That means always use, whether you like it or not, you do what is to be done, what is right. Whether you like it or not, you refrain from what is wrong. That is what is na ichchayakritam, ishwararpitam, na ichchayakritam. Such a karma becomes what? Chitta shodhakam. In due course of time, it results in mental purity. That pure mind becomes the disturbance-free mind. That mind alone is what? Can enjoy the contemplative disposition, that the recognition of the reality as the self is possible. Once the reality can be recognized as the self, then that is the only way you recognize fullness. Recognizing fullness, knowing fullness is attaining fullness. That is what is freedom, which is mukti. Therefore, living a life of karma yoga serves an indirect means for moksha. Even though knowledge is moksha, for that jnanam, the mind has it prepared. For that preparedness is dependent on what? Living a life of karma yoga. Therefore, he says, chitta shodhakam mukti sadhakam.
Okay. Therefore, the person now, see, the purushartha nischeha is there means, now we know, Bhagavan is the goal. Ishvara is the goal. Reality is the goal. Goal means what? Absolute end. Knowing, discovering who Bhagavan is, what the reality is, what the self is, what fullness is, what nirevu is what? Ultimate end. What are you living this life for? What is the purpose of living this life? Eating, going, coming, what is the purpose of living this life? Ultimately, when does this, you know, life really become a life of fulfillment, life of accomplishment? No, the successful life, the meaningful life. The life becomes complete, meaningful, successful life only in discovering Bhagavan in the form of fullness, or fullness in the form of Bhagavan, the reality. If Bhagavan is the being, the ultimate goal is very clear, then that person, that is when a person becomes a spiritual person. I told you many times in earlier classes. So spiritual, and the spiritual person, the purushartha nischeha is there, then all his actions become offered to Bhagavan. Means, when does this karma yogi, the one who lives life karma yoga, forget Bhagavan? No second. There's always Ishvara in his life. In every inhalation and exhalation, every fraction of second is Bhagavan in his life. That's why Bhagavan is never forgotten. Then when Bhagavan alone is remembered all the time, you don't need to remember Bhagavan. Because the purpose is very clear. Therefore, commitment to Dharma is there means Bhagavan is there. Bhagavan fills the life. Understand? Then you are close to Bhagavan. You are in tune with Bhagavan. You are in tune with, your all actions are in harmony with Bhagavan, the order. Therefore, this karma yogi, living a life of karma yoga implies being a nitya bhaktaha, an ever devotee. Whether he goes to church or temple or not, still he is a bhakta. Understand? He is not a religious person. He need not be a nitya bhaktaha. Only when he goes to temple or church, he is a bhakta. But understand, only when he does this or does this, he is a bhakta. But he, this karma yogi, whatever he does, his worship, and he is always a bhakta. All his work is worship. Any work he does is worship. He is nitya bhakta. In all his role plays, he is also playing the role of a devotee. But it is for antakarna shuddhi, okay? But antakarna naischalyam, the mental steadiness, needs a little more than this also. Of course, antakarna shuddhi will help one have antakarna naischalyam for mental steadiness, for the disturbed mind to become calm, and also to be able to live a life of karma yoga. No one needs Bhagavan's grace. Look at this. Avan arulal avantal patri. Even to be able to live a life of dharma, you know the value of dharma and you want to live a life of dharma. Understand? You try to live a life of dharma, but you are not able to live a life of dharma. That means what? It's a pain, isn't it? So even to be able to live a life of dharma, no one is grace. That is why one has to worship Bhagavan. One has to worship Bhagavan. One has to pray to Bhagavan. So, what is worship? Worship is an action. Look at this. Worship is an action. Worship always an action. Karma only. So, what is, through this act of worship, this act of worship is what? In fact, it's a symbolic act of offering. Act of worship is act of offering. Act worship is an act of offering. It's a symbolic act of offering. Because you can never offer anything to Bhagavan. Everything is Bhagavan. Nothing which is not Bhagavan here. Therefore, the one who is offering is Bhagavan. What is being offered is Bhagavan. The act of offering is Bhagavan. The one who is offered to is also Bhagavan. How can there be offering? Therefore, worship is a symbolic act of offering, through which something subtly is very expressed, for which, not through which one expresses one's gratefulness to Bhagavan, for blessing one with everything one needs to live this life. So one feels very humble that one cannot produce by oneself. I cannot produce whatever I want to live this life. Everything I am taking from the nature which is Devata, all these different powers which are Devatas, look at this, sun is a Devata, moon is a Devata, trees are Devata, which is not Devata here. Devata, Devaha means illumination of reality. Understand now? So, all that is, all these natural phenomena, every phenomenon is a Devata. All these phenomena are Devatas. All the Devatas put together, all the powers put together is what? Ishvara, the Lord, the whole. Therefore, where are they? Where do we take all that we enjoy to live comfortably? Where do we get them from? Do we produce? Electricity is available, so we discovered electricity, we are making use of our electricity. Isn't it? We are not producing electricity. You can't say I'm producing. You only take it from where do you produce it from? You are creating it or what? No, nothing is created. Please understand one thing. We are not creating anything. We only take, we discover what is, which is science, and we make use of what is available, which is technology. Isn't it? Do we create anything here? We discover what is available. Anything is available, we discover, we make use of it. You take from the nature only. Everything you take from the nature. What is that you are producing by yourself? Tell me. Nothing. Nothing you produce. You only discover, you make use of it. I produced. If you say, hey, you yourself is... Understand now. What is that which is produced here by you? Now I cooked the rice. So I made this sambar. Okay, it's only protected. In fact, you take what is available, you make it. You are not producing your dal, you are not producing your rice, you are not producing, understand, even the soil. Everything is already there. You take everything you grab from the nature, the Devatas, which is Bhagavan. For us, nature is Bhagavan. Nature is not mere bundle of energy for us. We take everything from Bhagavan, nature. So, you feel so humble. I cannot produce anything that I want to live this life. I want to take everything from the nature and to make my life comfortable. My food, my shelter, my clothing, all that I need to live my life comfortably, I take it from nature. Therefore, Bhagavan, if I feel so humble and I feel so grateful to Bhagavan, so as a token of my, as an expression of my gratitude, no, I offer something which I take from Bhagavan. So through the symbolic act of offering, everything is Bhagavan. The offerer, me, himself is what? Bhagavan only. Offerer myself is Bhagavan. Therefore, I feel so humble and I express my gratitude through this symbolic act of offering, now, through which I acknowledge, you know, I acknowledge the contribution of Devatas for my well-being. Therefore, worship is a symbolic act of offering. And this act of offering, so when you, this which is a symbolic act of offering, which is a worship. And this worship, in fact, our culture says, this worship also will bless one with prosperity, arthakamas. It will never go waste. Because worship is one action through, in expressing a gratitude in this worship, you know, you also pray, you also, worship implies what all you want also. So you also pray. The prayer is implied through this act of worship. What you want is implied, so this pray act of, the prayer is a, will involve auto-suggestion, which is an act which is really effective, efficacious, and worship is a karma which is efficacious, which is not a waste. Therefore, this action, worship and prayer being action, they bless one with what? Prosperity. They bless one with prosperity. And this worship, actually Ramana Maharshi says here, whenever you worship, and this worship involves threefold karma. The worship also involves what? Worship is an action. It is not any other action. It is a symbolic act of offering. I explained to you what is the significance of worship. I already explained to you. They worship, blesses one with, you know, Ishta Kama Siddhi. Now listen now, Ishta Kama Siddhi means what? Vara Siddhi. That's why Ganapati is given different names. Vara Siddhi Vinayakaha. Ishta Siddhi Vinayakaha. And it means what? Ishta Siddhi, Vara Siddhi means what? Siddhi means the one who blesses you with the accomplishment of whatever you desire. Artha and Kama. So worship blesses one with the fulfillment, accomplishment of any Artha Kamas also. That is why for prosperity and pleasures, you have to worship Bhagavan, invoke the grace of Bhagavan. And to be able to live a life of Dharma, you have to invoke the grace of Bhagavan. The worship will bless, worship as an action, a symbolic act of offering, as an action, bless you with what? Artha, Kama and Dharma. And this worship also can be what now? When you worship involves threefold karma, threefold activities. Kayikam karma, vachikam karma, manasam karma. So this karma yogi who lives a life of karma yoga, who is always a devotee, when he involves himself in this act of worshipping, in the form of doing, in the form of kayikam karma, when he does kayikam karma or vachikam karma or manasam karma, he just plays a role of a devotee. A karma yogi who is always playing the role of a devotee in all his other role plays, without playing other roles, just playing the role of a devotee. He is acting out the devotee. I mean, he expresses the devotee in him through these actions. Through kayikam karma, through vachikam karma, through manasam karma. What is kayikam karma? Physical activity is kayikam karma. Vachikam karma, oral activity. Manasam karma is mental activity. Threefold karmas. And what is this for? This worship, act of worship, which will bless you with the prosperity, which will bless you with the fulfillment of artha, kama and dharma, with the desired ends. Ishta siddhi praptaye no bhagavad anugraha apekshate through the act of worship. Ishta siddhi prapti, accomplishment of desired ends. You want money, you work hard, you also need what? Grace. You want to go for holiday, you want tickets, you want money. Understand, you want also, need also what? Grace. You may have money, you might have bought a ticket, you won't be able to fly. Something happens, something obstruction. Always there will be obstacles. Therefore, karma plus anugraha. Effort plus anugraha is equal to success. Okay? Mere action minus grace, failure. With minus action, grace is impossible. That's a total, utter failure. So when is success then? Success implies what? Effort, genuine effort, hard work plus grace. Genuine effort minus grace is equal to still a failure. Definitely a failure. Grace is very important. So success implies genuine effort plus grace. Prayatnaha and anugraha. Both should go hand in hand. And also for the time, kalaha. Kalaha, prayatnaha, anugraha. Three should go together for accomplishing anything. Three factors are involved in accomplishing anything. Artha, kama, dharma. For everything you need grace, anugraha. Because you need artha, kama to live this life. So you make efforts, you also need grace. Therefore what? Worship is a must. How do you invoke the grace? Through this act of worshipping. And through the act of praying. A prayer, a will involved auto-suggestion as an action is 100% efficacious. You will be blessed with what you pray for, without any doubt. Similarly, worship because through the wherein in fact worship is a very genuine expression of your gratefulness to Bhagavan, where you acknowledge Bhagavan's contribution for your well-being. Therefore, that's also what will bless you with fulfillment of your desired accomplishment of your desired, you know, ends. Anything you want, you can pray for to Bhagavan. No problem. That is why this is worship. But this act of worship itself can serve as pre-preparation for meditation. Act of worship, which involves kayikam, vachikam, manasam, karma, which involves threefold activity, physical, oral and mental activities, in fact, can serve as pre-preparation for meditation. In fact, the act of worship itself serves as meditation. Even though it involves physical activity, oral activity, still it is as good as meditation. It serves as preparation means for meditation. How? Because we have to understand, in this act of worshipping, the devotee, the karma yogi, just plays the role of a devotee. He does not play other roles. In all the other roles he plays, he is a devotee. You know why. Isn't it? But in the act of worshipping, he just plays the role of a devotee. He is not doing any other thing. Anything else. Why? How do you say it is a meditation? It is as good as meditation. It's a pre-preparation for meditation. Because his attention is totally focused on Bhagavan. The act of cook for prasadam, you cook, it's a kayakam karma. You offer, it's a kayakam karma. When you do namaskaram, it is kayakam karma. When you do this also, it's kayakam karma. It's all kayakam karmas, physical activities. The offering is a physical activity, is what? What is the focus then? What do you think of? When you do these activities physically, what do you think of? Only Bhagavan. The unknown Bhagavan you're thinking of. Lord is the focus. Ishvara is the focus. Therefore, it is as good as meditation. If the object of your thought is Bhagavan, then it is meditation. Therefore, kayakam karma also is, because when you sit there, your mind is not elsewhere. When you sit to do the puja, puja, yajnaha, or yagaha, whether you offer oblations into the fire, or whether you offer flowers sitting in front of the deity, flowers, and after that you also offer other things like coconut, etc. You offer candlelight, you offer other lights, you offer different aarti, dhoop, etc. All these offering is what? Physical activity only, isn't it? Any offering involves physical body, means it's a physical activity. What do you think of then? Only of Bhagavan. You have an altar which stands for Bhagavan the whole. I see that altar which stands for Bhagavan, and mind thinks of Bhagavan, and all that you offer to Bhagavan, mind is in Bhagavan. In worship, when you are worshipping, the mind is there in Bhagavan, it is worship. Mind is not there in Bhagavan, mind is thinking of something else, mechanically you do this, means it is just some karma. Understand? If Bhagavan is always remembered, whatever karma you do becomes worship. So, this is the difference. If Bhagavan is involved, it is yoga. If it is yoga, it is worship. If Bhagavan is not involved, then there is no yoga. It's just the karma. So physical activities. And as a part of it, you also sing in praise of the Lord. So you recite the mantras, you chant the mantras, recite shlokas, you sing lyrics. You sing bhajans, loudly or softly. Or mentally. When you chant it, it is called what? In fact, vachikam karma. Oral activity. When you chant also, you think of the words. If you know the meaning, you see the meaning. If you do not know the meanings, you only think of those words. Your mind is not elsewhere. The vachikam karma also becomes what? It's a pre-preparation for mind. Bhagavan is your focus is on Bhagavan. Then the same words, you chant it mentally, it is manasam karma. without moving your tongue inside, you just mentally chant, recite, it is a manasam karma. Or you visualize the form of Bhagavan, Swam, which stands for Bhagavan, which is symbol of the Lord, the altar, we should visualize or chant the names mentally, it is manasam karma, it's mental activity. If the focus of our attention is Bhagavan, then any action you do becomes worship. So in worship, the act of worshipping, your mind is only, whether you are doing something physically, your act of offering is through the physical activity or mental activity or oral activity, still it is what? Worship. It's all meditation only. It's a pre-preparation for meditation. It is very important. This act of worship will bless one with arthakamas. Fulfillment of desired, desirable arthakamas. This act of worship will bless one with the grace to be able to live a life of dharma. The act of worship will help one to live in harmony with dharma. The act of worship will bless one with pure and steady mind. The act of worship will prepare one's mind, will make the mind calm, will prepare the mind for meditation. Therefore, having talked about living a life of karma yoga, wherein a karma yogi is presented as a bhakta in all his role plays, the same bhakta, without playing any other role, just plays the role of devotee, wherein he involves in this kayikam, vachikam, manasam, karma, physical, oral, mental activities. Okay? Therefore, he says what? Kayavangmana karyamuttamam. Kayavangmana karyamuttamam. Chintanam japa, pujanam japa, chintanam kramat. Pujanam japa, chintanam kramat. Kayavangmana karyamuttamam. Kayavangmana karyamuttamam. Pujanam japas chintanam kramat. Pujanam japas chintanam kramat. He says kramat in order. Look at this. Kaya means what? Kaya karma. Kayikam karma. Kayam means body. In Tamil also, kaya means body only, physical body only. Kayam is what? Physical body. Kayikam karma or kaya karma means what? Physical activity. How do you involve physical body in the act of worship? Pujanam. So kayikam karma is pujanam, respectively. Pujanam means what? Sit in front, set an altar and prepare the things needed for puja and offer the oblations. Or you prepare the yajna kunda, kindle the fire and offer oblations. This is pujanam. Kayikam karma. Then vak karma. Vak karma or vachikam karma is what? Japaha. Doing the japaha is oral activity. Then manasam karma, chintanam. Manasam karma, what is mental activity involved in the act of worship? It says chintanam, thinking of the Lord, name of the Lord, mantra which unfolds the meaning of the Lord, or any given form, which stands for Bhagavan, the whole. Visualizing a given form is chintanam, thinking of the Lord. Mentally is what? Chintanam, manasam karma. Pujanam, kayikam karma. Japaha, vachikam karma. Manasam karma, chintanam, manasam karma. Thinking. See, he explains kramat. This threefold karma involved in the act of worship, which will bless one with all these things. Wherein a karma yogi a karma yogi who is always a devotee in all his role plays, just plays the role of a devotee in this act of, through this act of worship. Is it clear now? Kayavangmana karyamuttamam, kayavangmana karyamuttamam, pujanam japas chintanam kramat, pujanam japas chintanam kramat. So it is not that easy to have the meditative disposition of the mind. It is not that easy. As I told you earlier, reality is never away from the mind, never away from any thought. Like what? Like H2O is never away from wave. The wave itself will disappear if the H2O is not there. Similarly, no thought is possible, no mind is possible, nothing, no life is possible without the reality. Reality is never away from the mind. So the question of recognizing what that reality is, for which the mind has to have the meditative disposition, and that meditative disposition is not that easy. Recognition of reality is very, very easy, but the meditative disposition of the mind which is required for recognizing reality is not that easy, because mind is so turbulent. That is why this karma and the act of worship is very important. We never say rituals are useless. Understand? That is why temple, that is why you had to go there, worship. You also worship at home. Every day we have a puja room where we have Bhagavan, where we have altar, where we sit and do these things. It's very important initially to have that mind. Understand? So pujanam japaha, then chintanam kramat. Now, in order we have this threefold karma. And he explains only the kayikam karma. Now look at this. This not only this, the worship through which the act of worship, wherein one involves one's physical body is involved, you know, that alone, kayikam karma alone is not worship. Look at it, he's going to explain what is worship in the wider sense. The next verse, he's talking about how any physical activity one does can be converted into worship. That he's going to say in the next verse. So this act of worship wherein physical body is involved is worship. And any physical activity one does can be converted into worship. When, how? If it is performed within proper attitude as yoga. And what is the proper attitude? We have already seen Ishwar Arpita Buddhihi, Ishwar Prasada Buddhihi, etc. We have seen. But now he explains it very beautifully. How the any karma can be converted into yoga, worship. A preparatory means for jnanam. He says the next verse, the fifth verse. Jagat Ishadhi Yukta Sevanam, Jagat Ishadhi Yukta Sevanam, Ashtamurti Bhrit Deva Pujanam, Ashtamurti Bhrit Deva Pujanam, Jagat Ishadhi Yukta Sevanam, Jagat Ishadhi Yukta Sevanam, Ashtamurti Bhrit Deva Pujanam, Ashtamurti Bhrit Deva Pujanam. So he says, who is the Lord Devaha? Pujanam is worship. Pujanam of the Lord, worship of the Lord, Deva Pujanam, Devasya Pujanam Bhavati. It becomes the worship of the Lord. What becomes the worship of the Lord? Which Lord? Ashtamurti Bhrit. A Lord who is there as the whole is said to be Ashtamurti Bhrit. So Ashtamurti means what? Eightfold forms. A Lord alone is there. What the whole Jagat can be reduced to five elements? Isn't it? The universe is five elemental model. What is this Jagat? That which comes and goes, that which keeps on changing is jagat. Jayate, gacchati iti jagat. Jayate, tishtati, gacchati iti jagat. Varudu, podu, this is what is jagat. The word jagat itself tells you, jayate, gacchati iti jagat. Comes into being and goes. Disappears. Understand? That which keeps on changing is jagat. The whole cosmos is said to be jagat. Because which appears, which manifests, which becomes unmanifest. Which becomes manifest, which becomes unmanifest. When you wake up, it is there. When you fall asleep, jagat is resolved. Understand? Similarly, in pralaya also it becomes manifest, it becomes unmanifest. That is jagat. The whole jagat. And what is this whole jagat? Where does it come from? Where does it resolve? Where does it become manifest? Where does it become manifest from and where does it resolve? Not outside of the reality. The jagat comes into becomes manifest from the reality and it resolves in the reality. The jagat, whether it is manifest or unmanifest, it does not exist outside of the reality. All the waves emerge from the H2O, exist in H2O, resolve in H2O. The waves do not go elsewhere, do not come from elsewhere. Where do the waves come from? The entire ocean constitution of waves is nothing but what? Comes from water, exists in water, resolves in water only. Similarly, the whole jagat comes from the reality, exists in reality, resolves in reality. Therefore, the whole jagat is what? Manifestation. Where does it manifest from? The reality. Where does it exist? In reality. Where does it resolve? In reality. What is reality? Reality is the fullness, happiness. What is fullness? Reality, which is reality, which is Bhagavan, which is Ishwaraha. There is no other Ishwara other than the whole. Understand reality. Therefore he says, this reality alone is in the form of five elements. What are these five elements? Subtle elements or gross elements, grossified elements, and the elementals which constitute, the elemental products which constitute the whole jagat is what? Pancha. Understand now? Panchanana. Bhagavan has called Panchanana. Pancha, Panchapakesha. Understand now? We say so many names are there. So, Pancha means five stands for, your five elements and the elemental products are all for manifestation are the only reality. Five have come from the one only. One only is manifest as the five. And not only these elements. So this again how? We say here, Ashtam would be eight actually. Five. And what about the individual, if you say, what about the physical body? What about the sense powers? What about the pranas? All these are nothing but, we say the eight forms. Eightfold forms means what? Just eightfold forms stands for, in fact, the whole, all that is manifest here. Number eight stands for here, everything that is here. The subtle powers, the powers of organs of actions, the antakaranam, the mind, the elements, the conscious being, here, everything is what? Eightfold forms are nothing but the only reality. Therefore, we say here, the whole jagat, is what? In fact, is nothing but Ishwara. Therefore, Ashtamurti Bhrit Devaha. Who is the Lord? Lord is in the form of, these eightfold forms. Ashtamurti Bhrit. And worship of the Lord in these eight forms, is in fact what? Sevanam. What is the worship of this Lord? Look at this. What is the worship of the Lord? Pujanam is sevanam eva pujanam. Serving the universe is the worship of the Lord. Serving the universe becomes the worship of the Lord. Service to the universe becomes the worship of the Lord. Sevanam is pujanam. It's also kaikam. Not only the physical activity is involved in the act of worship is worship. Any physical activity now becomes worship. How does your activity become sevanam of the sevanam becomes pujanam? How does service become the worship of the Lord? Attitude. The yukta the service to the universe, or serving the universe with an understanding, with an attitude, or being endowed with the attitude, being endowed with the understanding. What is the dhiyukta sevanam? Dhi means attitude, buddhi here. What is the recognition? What is the knowledge? What is, with what understanding of the universe do you serve the universe? Isha, Ishaha eva, Jagat Ishaha. Jagat is the Lord. Whole Jagat is nothing but the Lord. Jagat eva Ishaha. Jagataha Ishaha, Jagat eva. Understand now, the Lord of the universe is in the form of the universe. The whole Jagat is Ishaha. The entire universe is the Lord. With this, being endowed with this understanding that this whole Jagat is the Lord. Now, serving this universe as now becomes serving, service to the Lord, becomes worship of the Lord. Jagataha Isha Dhiyukta Sevanam. Jagataha Sevanam. Service of the universe, service to the universe, serving the universe, being endowed with the understanding that the whole universe is nothing but Ishwaraha. Then what? Becomes worship of the Lord. Is it clear now? It's complicated words. Jagataha Isha Dhiyukta Sevanam. Jagataha Sevanam. Service of the universe. You have to make it little. Isha Dhiyukta Sevanam. Dhiyukta Sevanam. Being endowed with the knowledge, understanding, being endowed with this attitude that the whole Jagat is Ishara. Then serving the universe with this understanding, the universe being looked upon as Ishwara, then that service becomes what? Worship. Understand now? Service, again, I told you what is service. You don't need to go out of the way to go and clean the slums and all that. You can do whatever you want to do. But attitude. Whatever you do, with Ishwarpana Buddhihi. And then commitment to Dharma. All the actions you do or in conformity with Dharma, they do not transgress the values, means their Ishvara is recognized. That is very important. How much you do is not important. How you do is very important. The more you are able to do, that's good thing. But commitment to Dharma, all your actions are in conformity with Dharma, and all your actions or run with an attitude of offering it to Bhagavan, and with this understanding, Ishadi Jagadeva Ishaha Iti Dhi Yukta Sevanam. You know, serving the universe with understanding that the whole Jagat is Ishwa Ishwaraha. That service becomes what? Pujanam Bhavati. Kasya Pujanam Bhavati? Devasya Bhagavataha Pujanam Bhavati. Kidrushasya Devasya Pujanam Bhavati? Ashtamurti Bhrut Devasya Pujanam Bhavati. Ashtamurti Bhrataha Devasya Pujanam Bhavati. It becomes worship of the Lord. Understand now? So you have physical activity, there is physical body is involved in the act of worship, wherein you are just playing the devil role of a devotee, but in playing all your roles, you can become a devotee. You can convert all the actions you do into worship. If you serve the universe, looking at the universe as Bhagavan. So, okay, that is said here. Why should you do this? Antakarna Shuddhyartam. You have to remember this. Why should I serve the universe? Then, he is going to talk about the japaha, manasam karma. Now, that is over. He is going to talk about the japaha, vachikam karma. Having talked about the kayikam karma, how to convert any physical activity into worship, now he is talking about the oral activity, the japaha. See, the vachikam karma. Vachikam karma means what? We have to understand, we reciting the shlokas, the verses, or chanting the mantras, or singing in praise of the Lord, the lyrics, singing the lyrics in praise of the Lord, or psalms, or no, you have so many things, or wherein you praise, glorify the Lord. The glories are expressed in your verses. This is all vachikam karma. Suppose in vachikam karma, in singing, we have two types of praises. I mean, two types of oral activity. One is called stavaha, another one is called japaha. Because here he doesn't mention separately the japa, but he had to understand here. When you do, suppose as a vachikam karma, as part of your worship, you recite Vishnu Sahasranama, or Lalita Sahasranama, or Ashtotra Shatanama Valihi, or you recite a bhajan or lyric, wherein many words are involved. Many words are involved, isn't it? You don't praise the Lord using only one word. Om Krishnaya Namaha, Om Govindaya Namaha, Om Vasudevaya Namaha, Om... Like that, many words you recite. You chant many words. You utter many words. Or you chant a Maupurusha Suktam, Om Sahasrashirsha Purushaha. Too many words are involved. Or you sing a bhajan, Krishna Rama Govinda, like that. Or even if you sing anything, so praise, words of praise, okay? In fact, wherein more words are involved in praising of the Lord, and when you recite it orally, loudly, it's called what? Stavaha. What is it called? Stavaha. A praise of the Lord involving many words is called stavaha. If you repeat many names of the Lord, it is called stavaha. That's also fine. Because mind is in Bhagavan. Whether you sing a lyric, or whether you recite a mantra, chant a mantra, or recite a verse, the mind is there, it is good. It is worship. It's good. Because it helps you to have steady mind. But what he says, what is japaha? Repeating one name, repeated utterance of one name is called japaha. So japaha is oral activity, stavaha is also oral activity. But what is better here? It's better to do some stavaha. Okay, but what is much better is doing japaha is much better than doing stavaha. Stavaha involves many names, many words, whereas japaha involves may involve many names, many words, but it involves only one repetition of one given mantra or one name of the Lord. One nama is what? Japaha. That is japaha. And this japaha also, we'll see this. And this japaha also, how it should be done, he says, if you say it loudly, Uchaihi kriyamanaha japaha, loudly done japaha, or stavaha. You do namaha, puja means whole jagat, everybody around can listen to your japaha, means others, all the people around can listen. Sometimes when we chant the mantra, we do it loudly so the others can listen. At least they have the opportunity to listen to some mantras. This is a purpose, it tells them a purpose. But as a spiritual sadhana, really doing anything loudly, wasting all your energy. Most of the times we make it for others, to keep others quiet, listen to this. And also to have sounds, heard everywhere. We recite it loudly, which is appreciated actually. But still, as a spiritual sadhana, if you see, it always saying something softly, doing a japam is better than say doing the japam loudly. So uchaihi kriyamanaha japaha, nichaihi kriyamanaha japaha. A japa which is done softly is better than japa which is done loudly. So japaha is better than stavaha, and softly done japa is better than loudly done japaha. Om Trimbakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukami Vabandhanan Vrityor Mukshi Yamamrita Ate Uchajapaha. Understand? ओम त्र्यंबकं यजामहे सुगंधिं पुष्टिवर्धनम् उर्वारुकमिव बंधनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षेयमामृतात्। ओम नमः शिवाय, ओम नमः शिवाय, और ओम नमो नारायणाय, और ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। एनी स्पिरिचुअल टीचर, व्हेन यू अप्रोच द पर्सन, फर्स्ट थिंग दिल गिव यू इज मंत्र उपदेश। मंत्र उपदेश मीन्स व्हाट? टीचिंग अ गिवन मंत्र टू अ पर्सन। दिल आस्क यू फॉर योर इष्ट देवम एंड दिल गिव यू अ गिवन मंत्र। वन मंत्र विल बी टॉट टू यू। That is why jap, mantra upadesha means now you can't take to go too many doctors, gurus and take too many mantras. What it taken one mantra from guru means is enough. The only one that is a called japa. You can, because I was so greedy. We are, you know, like we buy so many things from so many shops. We also want to have mantras also from so many people. I taken this mantra from this guru, that mantra from that guru. That is not japa. That is your, okay, spiritual tourism, that is something different, not even spiritual tourism. It is sort of religious, that is a different thing. Going to different people and taking too many mantras and then you don't practice in one. That is not a japam. So japam means one mantra. One mantra. Doesn't matter who you have taken it from. Always better to take it from a teacher who you learn with. You understand where you get clarity. Who you can always ask the doubts and all those things. You know? But otherwise, if you take it all, it doesn't matter. But any mantra, if you do it with Shraddha, it is effective. Irrespective of who the teacher, who the person who gave you. Only one mantra. Now repeating, repeatedly reciting one mantra is what? Japaha. Any one thing. Which implies prayer, which implies worship also. So japaha, and this also, when everybody else can listen to you, what you are saying, it is uccha japaha. And nicha japaha is what you alone can listen to what you say. It is nicha japaha. It is better. And Ramana Maharshi says, in fact, you also need not listen to what you are saying. That means what? Listen to means, your ears need not listen to what you are saying means, you know what you are reciting, but your own ears do not listen, cannot listen, cannot hear means what? You listen, you know what you are reciting, but your own ears cannot hear what you are reciting means, you chanting, you chant the mantra mentally, without even moving your tongue inside your mouth. It is manasam japaha. Same uccha japaha, nicha japaha, then manasam japaha. Others can hear. If others can hear what you are chanting, it is uccha japaha. Others cannot hear, you alone can hear what you are reciting, it is nicha japaha. Even your own ears cannot hear what you are chanting, but you know what you are chanting, it is manasam japaha. Manasam japaha, mentally reciting, repeating a mantra is what? Manasam japaha is the best of the japaha. Best of the japa. So that he says in this verse.
Uttamastavaduchamandataha. Uttamastavaduchamandataha. Chittajam japa dhyanamuttamam. Chittajam japa dhyanamuttamam. Uttamastavaduchamandataha. Uttamastavaduchamandataha. Chittajam japa dhyanamuttamam. Chittajam japa dhyanamuttamam.
So, uttamastavat uchamandataha. No? Uttamastavaha means what? See, stavaha. I told you, explained to you what is stavaha. So, a praise of the Lord, a prayer to the Lord, the oral activity wherein you involve many words of the Lord, many names of the Lord is called stavaha. So stavaha, so any, now you can stavaha means singing lyrics or bhajans and all mantras and shlokas you recite, everything was stavaha only. So stavaha is always better. Stavaha is involved in oral activity. But stavat means stavate kattilum. No, then involving many words in singing in praise of the Lord, stavat, he says, now uttama stavat uccha mandataha. Uttama stavat japaha is implied here. Japaha is better. And there again, what are uccha mandataha? Uccha mandataha means what? Uccha japaha manda japaha. Uccha japaha means a loudly done japaha. Japaha is better than uttama stavat. Stavat japaha is better. That's why these words you had to explain very clearly. And there again, uccha mandataha. There's uccha japaha manda japaha. Uccha japaha means loudly doing japa. Isn't it? Saying, chanting a name loudly. Mantra loudly is uccha japaha. Manda, then manda japaha. Manda japaha is better than uccha japaha. Then mandataha, even then, what is better than softly done japa is what? Chittajam japaha. Chittajam japaha means what? Mentally done japaha. The japa which is done mentally is what? Chittajam. Chittajam japaha uttamam. Chittajam japaha is uttamam means what? The japa which is done mentally is better than manda japaha, nichaihi kriyamanaha japaha. Understand now? So nich japaha is better than what? In fact, the uccha japaha. Uccha japaha is better than stavaha. Is it clear now? Japa is better than stavaha, and there again, nich japaha is better than uccha japaha, and chittajam japaha, manasam japaha is better than nicha manda japaha. Why? Because this manasam japaha, chittajam japaha become what? Uttamam dhyanam bhavati. It becomes meditation. See, mentally done japaha, the mental manasam japaha is as good as meditation. It becomes meditation. Therefore, it is better. Is it clear now? We see the wording, word arrangements. Tamil words and Sanskrit words for Ramaharshi are very, you have to supply words to understand. You can't even see the word japa and all that. Because he mentions the word japa in the second line, we have to understand that japa is also mentioned by uccha, manda, taha, etc.
Uttamastava uccha manda taha uttamas japa uccha manda taha chittajam japa dhyanam uttamam chittajam japa dhyanam uttamam.
Okay, now we had to understand one more thing here. Okay, now we have already seen how our physical activity done with the proper attitude of what? Whole jagat is Ishvara. With that understanding, when you serve the universe, anything you do becomes worship. Pujanam bhavati. Sevanam becomes pujanam. Pujanam, pujanam. Isn't it? Now he said, what is tavaha, what is japaha, and what japa is better than what japaha we have seen. Here, this manasam japaha, chittajam japaha means manasam japaha. The japa which is done mentally is uttamam dhyanam bhavati, is as good as meditation. Therefore, it is best. And there is one thing, how does it help? How does this japa help in making the mind steady? How does this japa contribute for mental steadiness, mental calmness? You know, the mind is of the nature of agitation. is always in a state of flux, turbulence. Because so many thoughts keep coming, keep arising, and they're there. And whatever thought which arises, which is already there in subconscious, in latent, in dormant condition. That is why whatever thought comes, we have to understand one thing. What is this mind? The same Ramana Maharshi, we are going to see later on, what is this mind? We say all the waves are in the ocean. Waves are of the ocean, we say. In fact, even though we, for want of expression, we say waves are in the ocean. Really speaking, all the waves together constitute the ocean. Isn't it? Similarly, all the thoughts are in the mind, we say. All the thoughts together constitute the mind. All constitution of various thoughts together, what? Is mind. Antahkaranam. And then whatever the thoughts come, we are not creating the thoughts. See, as an individual, as a human being, you are not creator of your thoughts. In fact, individual is, or the thoughts form part of the individual. We have to remember this. Like any car, any car is what? Many spare parts put together intelligently constitute the car. Isn't it? So without one part, there's no car. But one part alone does not make the car. All the parts together constitute the car. Similarly, without one thing, without the gross body, there's no individual. But gross body alone is not the individual. Without a subtle body, there's no individual. But the subtle body alone is not individual. Without the mind, there is no individual. Mind alone is not the individual. Without the sense powers, there's no individual. Sense powers alone are not the individual. It's a conscious being. There's a conscious being. And then all the subtle factors, 16 subtle factors, all of them together with the gross body constitute the whole individual. So individual is what? Thoughts which arise, which are there, which resolve, are also form part of the individual. So the individual is not a creator of the, in fact, understand now, see, every wave is part of the ocean. Ocean does not create the wave, isn't it? Similarly, you are not creator of your thoughts, creator of your mind. So thoughts are, in fact, thoughts form the part of the individual. So all these thoughts just arise and remain, resolve. And where do they come from? They're already there, latent, in subconscious. Why we subconscious? Because mind is the subtlest when you say it is imperceptible. You understand the thoughts being there, mind being there. Thoughts arise, thoughts are, thoughts resolve. And there's no, and it's a function. Like how physical, the heart is a physical function, grasp the physical function, Similarly, the mind also is a function. And this function is in within the realm of a given order. And why these thoughts come, then that's what there's an order. Because they're already latent. And this order is backed by knowledge. That knowledge is Ishvara, order is Ishvara, the function is Ishvara. Everything, nothing is outside of the reality, therefore. Therefore, this is the mind, okay? This is what is the thoughts. This is how the thoughts come and go. That is why sometimes what happens, the thoughts can just go. When one thought comes, one thought can take you from one vastu object to other thought. It can always take you elsewhere. Sitting here, you can just go to Rishikesh March camp and see, sitting here, if I should think of Swamiji, then just the thought comes, okay, we are reading Upayasaram by Swamiji. And Swamiji thought, at least it's all good thoughts only. Sometimes, no, thought comes. And from Swamiji's thought, what happened? Orange dress. Then it goes to, then spice jet, okay, it doesn't go take you to Rishikesh, okay, spice jet, the jacket. The people, the spice jet staff wear this orange color jackets. Then that takes you to what? Then the place where you travel to buy spice jet. And spice jet, though, you went to Spain or Germany by spice jet. And then from Germany you saw somebody. And that person reminds you of some, your cousin. And your cousin, who really betrayed you or cheated you something. And then that causes angry in you. That anger, there suddenly comes somebody who comes in front and asks you something, you just elect the person. Like that, it goes like always the thought, one thought, there's no connection. Why one thought leads you to another thought, other object? How the thoughts come? You have completely, you have no control. Please understand, you have no control over your thoughts. You have no say over your thoughts because you are not creator of your thoughts. The thoughts form part of you, the whole individual. Understand now? That's why you have just the thoughts come. That is why even if you don't want to have the thoughts, sometimes you don't, there is another thought which is not happy with the thoughts which come. Understand now? We have no control. Just the thoughts just come. Completely, you are in the hand. Understand now? The thoughts come. It takes you to that. This is called meandering of the thoughts. This is the problem of the human mind. Okay? Any human mind, we have this. Sometimes it is harmlessly meandering of thoughts. Harmless meandering of thoughts. Sometimes harmful, the meandering of thoughts results in some, damage and destruction of relationship, etc. Because of the reaction. It results in reactions. Sometimes it doesn't cause any reaction. It can cause any damage. It can bring about any, the problems. Because of it can result in reactions. Sometimes it doesn't result in reactions. It is useless. It takes the mind totally away from, you cannot be focused. The meandering of thoughts, in fact, prevents one from being focused. Okay? The more meandering of thoughts which results in reaction, which ultimately results in reaction, causes more turbulence in the mind. It completely disturbs the easiness of mind and thereby it prevents one from being focused. And even if it doesn't result in reaction, because the meandering of thought, sometimes it just takes your mind away from one thing to many things, then it prevents you from being focused. If you are not able to be focused, you are disturbed means you cannot be focused. The turbulence of the mind, the more the mind is turbulent, the more my attention is scattered. The more the attention is scattered, the more you cannot be focused. The more you cannot be focused, the more you cannot have meditative disposition. The more you cannot have meditative disposition, the more you are away from recognizing the reality. Understand? That is why the mind, this delicate darling, has to be handled, fondled with the care and attention. Therefore, what is the means? How can you avoid this problems caused by meandering of the thoughts, which is natural problem of a mind? How are you going to manage this? You cannot undo this meandering of thoughts. Okay, but you can manage this. How? Taking care of mental purity by living a life karma yoga, one thing. And the second thing, you manage your thoughts by living a life of dharma. And now, japaha also helps avoiding this meandering of thoughts, which prevents one from being focused, which makes the mind, attention of the mind is scattered, which causes the turbulence in the mind. Is it clear now? Therefore, japaha. That is why any spiritual teacher, if you go in India, if you say, I want to have jnanam, even if you don't want to ask for jnanam, and I'm so disturbed, I want to be peaceful, I want to do something, I want to be really quiet, and I'm not able to concentrate. Whatever problem you go and tell any spiritual teacher, first thing they will do is come here tomorrow morning, early in the morning, get up early in the morning, sleep, have good sleep, come fresh in the morning, and then I'll give you mantra upadesha. They'll tell you that. And next day when you go early in the morning, before breakfast, your stomach is empty and you're so calm, after good rest, you go there. So you recite the mantra correctly. Not in the afternoon, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, after big lunch, come, I'll give you mantra pradesham. The sun is so hot, it's very, you know, this blazing sun and a very hot, they won't give you. Early morning, they'll ask you to give for month, come for mantra pradesha. And they give you mantra pradesha. And teach one mantra. Come on, this is your mantra, not nothing special. Come on, keep on chanting this. And initially find it very difficult to chant mentally. So start orally. At least Uchi Japaha, at least Nichi Japaha. Then they will also give you this, ask you to have this mala to, for counting. You know, so that your attention doesn't go anywhere. It's all initial. In fact, you don't need mala also for Manasa Japaha. Understand now? Mala, little attention is taken by this mala. Mala can wear it, but japa should be mental, manasam. Once you learn, get it, and there's no time, you'll always, japa will be on and on and on all the time. It's a question of practice, how much you do, how long you do. Therefore, japa is very, very important. It will avoid. In fact, the best thing is, so it's not mere japaha. See, without living a life of karma yoga, now without being conscious of living a dharmic, righteous, ethical life, without being conscious of living a life of values, simply practicing japaha, mantra japaha, understand, will be useful. I won't say it is useless, but it won't serve the purpose. Not serve the purpose. That is why the life, dharma is so important. Life of value is very important. The person who lives a life of karma yoga, who is highly conscious of dharma, and then japa also will, for such a person, japa will do wonders. Then japa also, oral activity also becomes yoga. Kayakam karma becomes yoga. Vachikam karma becomes yoga. Manasam karma becomes yoga. Everything becomes yoga. Now, then you have complete, you know, you will be conscious of your thoughts. That is the only way you can become mentally alert and sharp. The manasam japa will help one have sharpness of intellect. No, alertness, mental alertness. You will avoid being mechanical. You will avoid forgetfulness. You forget now where I kept this. I forgot where I kept this. The forgetfulness. Because the more you are mentally alert, the more you can grasp fast, and the more, you know, you can learn. You can just get things, you can just get everything as you see, get imprinted. Sharpness, mental sharpness, you know, the alertness, and you know, slowly the forgetfulness also will go, the dullness will go. The mind is so clear, means, and you can manage. You can see that slowly the jealousy, hatred for, you know, people and then things, situations, natural for one to have hatred, and the hatredness, no, all these things, slowly, jealousy, etc., you will manage so beautifully, very well. They won't get expressed, they won't cause any damage. So all these things will be, the mind can be very, very beautifully managed, living a life karma yoga and doing manasam japaha. That is why the initial sadhana always is japaha. You have to know the importance of japaha. Isn't it? That is why his tavaha is very good, but uttama stavat japaha, uccha japaha is better. Japaha is better than stavaha. Even than uccha japaha, nicha japaha is much better. Even manasam japaha is the best. In fact, better than nicha japaha also. Manasam japaha serves as meditation, dhyanam, uttamam dhyanam bhavati, and thereby you can avoid the problems, you know, the caused by the mental turbulence and the nature of the mind, that such as, you know, meandering of thoughts, etc., which results in in causing damages, which results in damage, and also which results in, in fact, the prevent, which results, which prevents the mind from being focused. Okay, give you a break now. I guess you need a break. I know that.
Uttamastava duchamandataha. Uttamastava duchamandataha. Chitta jam japa dhyanam uttamam. Chitta jam japa dhyanam uttamam. Uttamastava duchamandataha. Uttamastava duchamandataha. Chitta jam japa dhyanam uttamam. Chitta jam japa dhyanam uttamam.
Om shanti shanti shanti.